Good evening. This is Elaine Ireland, and you're listening to Going Global for Spirit with Elaine Ireland. And when I mean global, I mean global. This is BDSradio.com, but you already know that. We are the number one worldwide internet talk radio network on the planet. And in a few minutes, I'll give you two different phone numbers. One for the United States and Canada, and one for worldwide. That means any place else other than the United States and Canada. So grab a piece of paper and a pen and take those numbers, because you're going to want to call in tonight. My guest tonight is Sarah Armstrong. She's an author recently of The Shattered Pearl by Sarah Armstrong, and a second book, After Me, You Come First, which she co-authored with her daughter, a unique approach to self-care for women. So, but please, guys, pay attention to the show tonight, because this is a wonderful experience from somebody who's been on the front lines with the Peace Corps. Welcome, Sarah. I'm so excited about you being here.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
Are you comfortable? Because I want this to be a good show for both of us.
I'm extremely comfortable.
Okay. Your list of what you can talk about but is long, obviously. But the message about adversity, diversity, the impact of globalization, where would you like to start? I'd like to start with The Shattered Pearl. I love the book.
That would be fine.
tell the world about your Shattered Pearl, and I do think of it as your Shattered Pearl.
Well, thank you. The Shattered Pearl is an accounting of my 10 years living in Uganda in East Africa from 1967 to 1977, and six of those years were under the rule of Idi Amin. The name comes from the Uganda being called the Pearl of Africa, and I witnessed it being shattered into many pieces. I went to Uganda originally in the Peace Corps as a teacher, and I fell in love and married a Ugandan and decided to live there, and my two children were born there. And I witnessed, I was present when Amin overthrew the government and witnessed the destruction of this beautiful country during the time of his reign.
And it just seemed like it was unstoppable.
Well, you as an American especially, where we know that on January the 20th or so, George Bush will leave office and somebody else will step in. There is no question about that. He will not, he's not going to try and get the government to keep him or get the army to keep him in power. He's going to leave and somebody else will come, because the people have spoken and that's the law. And it's mind-blowing to be somewhere where in a matter of hours, and it was literally that, one president is gone and the army is in control, absolute control, where they are changing laws and throwing out the Constitution and shooting people down on the street. I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone, that this couldn't possibly be happening to this shy little girl from the south side of Chicago. It was not happening to me. It is absolutely astounding. So what I hoped to do with the book also was to give people a feeling of what the rest of the world goes through. We get desensitized when we see this on television and, oh, there's been a military coup. Well, yeah, what else is new? But it is devastating for the people who are involved, and they are virtually powerless.
And terrified.
And terrified.
That you wrote so directly. I'm not going to say simply, because your writing was not simple by any stretch of the imagination, but so directly that it was easy for me to get the sense of what you were going through. You as an individual, you as a woman, you as a mother, you as that wonderful young lady who fell in love and decided to not turn your back on, but to make major life changes, but to the point of giving up your citizenship so you could protect your new family.
Yes.
Even without children.
Yeah, that became necessary when I knew that we needed to leave. But the laws in Uganda, if you could call them laws, were such that if you were a foreign national married to a Ugandan, particularly a woman, they would not let you put your children on a foreign passport. And so I knew that the only way that I could get my children out, I needed to have my children on my passport, because I wasn't really sure at that point if my husband was going to leave with me. It was a terrible decision for him when we talked about leaving behind his mother and his sisters and brothers, and he was the oldest son. After his father died, the responsibility for the family fell on him. But I knew I needed to get out, and I needed to get my children out. And so the only way I could see to do that was to renounce my American citizenship, get a Uganda passport. I then had put my children on there, and that gave me a valid document to leave the country.
And I have to say this, and I hope I'm politically correct here, that you are a woman of color, which in a way made it easier for you to move around and to get the passport.
Yes, it did. It definitely did. If in several dangerous situations, if I just kept my mouth shut, they did not know that I was not a Ugandan. So I moved around fairly freely, and I saw some things that the newspaper reporters and the diplomats and others did not see. Also, when I decided to give up my American citizenship, many in Uganda thought, oh, you've come home, you know, you've come back to Africa, and now you're going to be one of us. So it did make things easier, yes.
Would you do it over again?
For my children, yes. I've thought about that before, but every time, my daughter is now 35 years old, and there'll still be days that she'll come to me and say, thank you for getting us out. I would do it again for my children. Yes, I would.
Had you not had children, would you have stayed?
I don't think so. I might have stayed a little bit longer, but I had also reached the breaking point. There's only so much pressure you can live under. And to live in a situation where you never know, any time you go out of your door, whether you're going to come back alive, you don't know who's going to knock on your door in the middle of the night and drag you out. I was frazzled. I was terrified. I had to get out for my own sanity. I think I would have, I might have stayed a little bit longer, but I think I would have left. Yes, I would have left.
I don't know how to form this question, so be patient with me as I stumble through it.
Okay.
You had a different history. You grew up in America.
Yes.
Where freedom is a little different here.
Yes.
We're not totally, but certainly different from where you were in Uganda. People who grew up there, I'm sure they were under pressures. At life-giving fear, doesn't matter what your history is. But were they able to handle it in a different way than you? Did they become as frazzled and as broken down as women or as men in the same manner that you did, because you had a history of knowing that that wasn't right? They know it's not right on some level. But
yeah, theirs had been a bit of a different experience. Most of them there had grown up under the colonial government, the British colonial government. So they were accustomed to living kind of a dual life. They did what they needed to do to please the colonial powers and to do what they needed to do, but then they had their own life in the village, which was very different. For instance, to get into a school, they were mostly mission schools, you had to become, you know, swear that you were a Christian. So everybody, sure, I'm a Christian, I want to get into your school. And when someone died, they would take them to the church and do the Christian ceremonies. And I'm not trying to say they weren't sincerely Christian. They were. But then they would take the body to the village and do some of the tribal ceremonies almost in secret because of the colonial government or some of the missionaries didn't approve. From that, they were given independence, which kind of meant, here you are, thank you very much, and shoved them out into the world economy. And the leaders of the country were more or less chosen by the colonial government, although there was an election. So they had a different kind of colonialism, if you would. The person who was the president had his picture on the paper. He had an extensive network of spies who listened out to hear if you were speaking against him. The army was used, always was kind of standing in the background as a threat. Well, you could move around easily, and the economy was good, but there was still this aura of you'd better not say anything against the president or you'll be in trouble. So I think Amin taking over was just a very bad extension of that. And here now you had somebody who was actively, openly terrorizing people and terrorizing them at random. So it was very different. I remember my students questioning me when I was a teacher when Richard Nixon resigned. And they said, what did he do? And I was trying to explain. And they said, well, did he kill anybody? And I said, not that I know of, but the idea that the people could vote someone out of office, could make a president step down, was a little bit outside of their realm of experience.
But you're right, they lived two lives almost, two
yes.
belief systems.
It's true. I saw it when my father-in-law died, he had worked for the British. When they were there, he was a well-respected civil servant, and they went to the Church of Uganda Cathedral in the city, and they had a very formal kind of ceremony. And then we went to the village, and they did all of the ceremonies and things that were tribally required.
Required, that's an interesting word. So they were honoring their ancestry, really.
They were honoring their ancestry. There were certain things that the family had to do. There were certain rituals that needed to be performed because they felt that was important to honor their tribal ancestry. The tribal identification is very important in Africa. It is a blessing and a curse. It is a curse in that tribalism is the source of so much discord. And when you see somewhere like Rwanda, that's it to the extreme. So tribal identity is very important, and it's very important to honor the traditions of your ancestors in all ways.
The list that you have, tribal conflicts, that's not like our A&M and UT games that go on. We're talking serious conflict here.
We're talking very, very serious conflict. Part of the trouble is, and I don't want to get too deep and historical here, but the boundaries of the countries in Africa are totally artificial. They were cut up in the latter part of the, I guess it would be the 19th century, by the major powers of the world to divide resources. So, you know, Belgium got a little piece and France got a piece. So there are groups clumped together in a country that would not naturally fall together in the same area. One example, the people of northern Uganda are virtually the same as the people of the southern Sudan. And so now we see in Darfur and other places, North and South Sudan don't get along. It's because they're completely different people. In Uganda, if you draw a line from east to west across the middle, if you're from northern Uganda, you can only speak to someone in southern Uganda in English because the languages are absolutely different, totally different. So there's a lot of misunderstanding. We take for granted, for instance, that when our president speaks to us, that we can understand what he says because he's speaking English. But there, it's spoken in one language and then translated into others, and that leads to so much misunderstanding. So we're talking tribal identities where it is, that is the first question almost you're asked, what tribe are you? Or you wear an identifying mark of some kind as to what tribe you are. It is essential to your identity.
Are the tribes, is there a caste system?
Not,
is there one
not,
tribe you're better, or is it just...
It's a matter of of personality. They're in, I won't say which one, but there was in Uganda a tribe that held itself, I believe, a bit above everybody else because a lot of the better schools and industrial things and whatever was in their area. And they were kind of looked upon as being very arrogant. A part of the issue is that the traditions of these tribes are so very different. What is absolutely forbidden for one is all right for the other. And so that leads to, you know, my tribe's better than your tribe kind of thing.
While you catch your breath, let me give the phone numbers to the folks.
Okay.
The United States and Canada, please call 1-888-228-4494, 1-888-228-4494. And worldwide, any place else other than the United States and Canada, please call 877-489-6350. Let me give that to you again, 877-489-6350. Our guest this evening is Sarah Armstrong. She is the author of The Shattered Pearl, about her life in Uganda between 67 and 77. But it is so much more than that. Have you had any flack from Africa because of this book?
I've had some people who, not a lot, I've had some people who've resented what I wrote, that I was painting a, why did I have to tell all the awful things that happened? Well, I told them because they're true. I haven't had a lot of flack about it, no. Not a great deal, just a little.
If you were to go back, or have you been back? Do you think
I have not been back to Uganda, no.
If you went back, do you think you would be received, or do you think you would be hassled?
I really think I would be well received. I still have in-laws there and family there, and they would welcome me. And I think what's very crucial here is once a country has been through the kind of thing Uganda has been through, there is a tendency not to get into controversy with anybody about anything. So if I went back and they said, well, she wrote a book about, you know, how bad Amin was, they would go, well, yeah, he was bad, but he did some good things. I read a lot about how Forrest Whitaker was greeted when he went to Uganda to make the movie The Last King of Scotland.
Yeah.
And how he said so many people were walking up to him and telling him, we're so glad you're here, we're glad you're making the movie, but, you know, Amin wasn't all bad. There is this feeling that I can't, people still feel if I say that if I stand against Amin, even now there might still be consequences. So I think I would be received. It would be fine.
Have any of your relatives been here to the States?
Yes. I've had two sisters-in-law, a brother-in-law visit. My mother-in-law came after, you know, on a very sad mission, but she came 3 years after we came here. I have a large contingency of relatives in London. So, yes, I've visited with them often.
Good. Somehow I felt like you had after reading your book. I just couldn't imagine you just simply walking away.
Well, there's one thing about family in Uganda. I am the mother of two children that belong to that family. And those ties will stay forever. I am forever involved with them. My first husband, James, whom I married in Uganda, died when we got to this country. And even after he, you know, his death, and when I remarried, my brother-in-law came to the wedding because he felt it was his responsibility to be there to check up on the person that I was marrying. And they keep in, my children keep in touch with their cousins, so we are forever joined together.
That's wonderful. What a fresh breath of air.
Yeah, it is.
Breath of fresh air.
That is one thing that's extremely strong across Africa is family.
Not to change the subject, but you are a speaker and you do training and counseling services specializing in cross-cultural communication, life skills, and innovative leadership techniques. How did you get involved in all that?
It's because I've had this wild and crazy life.
I knew you were going to say that.
That I've led that's allowed me to pick up through experience bits of information that I and techniques that I think are important. And I always loved to teach, and when I came back, I went out a lot talking about my experiences in Uganda and found out how very insulated we are as Americans and how we really don't, we're learning, but how we really don't know how to talk to or about people from other countries. I can remember when I first came back, people coming to see me at my mother's house and walking right past my children out in the yard saying, "We've come to see the little African children. Where are they?"
Oh, my.
And these are people of color. I said, well, there they are. I don't know what they expected them to be, but so I started talking to people about being more conscious about the things you say and realizing that we are not just one big homogeneous planet anymore. And we never were, but now we are, you know, globalization and the world is, you know, as Thomas Friedman said, the world is flat and it's also very small. We're going to have to learn how to talk to each other in ways that are different from the way we do it now.
Do you think the world ever was more homogeneous? Thank you. At one point, I'm thinking back in the 70s, maybe even early 80s, it seemed to me, I'm in my 60s,
mm-hmm.
so it seems to me that it was at one point. We didn't look at color or religion as much as we even seem to do now.
Well, that might be, but I think we kind of were, you know, had on rose-colored glasses and maybe some controlled substances were involved, but I just think that other places are now in our living rooms in such a way, you know, these 24-hour news stations and things and the internet has brought this right into our laps. Also, globalization, global business. I tell people in my classes that I am not here to make you like or dislike anybody. I don't expect us all to be holding hands and singing "We Are the World" by the time we leave. But if you pick up your phone to call your credit card company, you're having a cross-cultural experience, whether you want to or not.
That's true.
You're having one. And so go to the mall. In the 70s when you went to the mall, how many languages did you hear? Not as many as you do now.
No, not at all.
Not at all. So,
and I live in a big university town.
Right, and I live in, you know, parts of it in Georgia. And I go to the mall here and I can hear Chinese and Japanese and Vietnamese and Spanish and a little bit of everything. So we have to have a new way to relate to each other because the world is, we are not... we are not sitting here very comfortably between our oceans and Canada anymore. We are a part of the global village, and we're going to have to learn how to operate a little differently.
And what are the top three things that you tell people about how to operate differently when you do your classes or your lectures?
When I'm talking about cross-cultural communication, the first thing I say is don't assume. People make assumptions. Oh, they look at somebody and say they're, oh, look, they're Japanese, Chinese, whatever it is. Don't make those kinds of assumptions by the way someone looks. Don't make any assumptions about someone's ability to speak English by the way they look. I can remember I had a job once where I went on a trip to Korea, and one of the people in the group was Vietnamese, and people kept asking him to translate. And he said, I'm Vietnamese. You know, so don't assume. Don't look at any group of people and assume you know who they are. And I tell them to be particularly careful when everybody in the room looks like you and you think it's safe to say certain things. But in these days, you don't know who's married, who people's husbands and wives and partners are. You don't know who kind of children they've adopted. You don't know who their brothers and sisters are married to. So you really have to just think before you open your mouth. So it's you know, don't assume. The other big thing I teach is, one of the others, is you are going to mess up. You're going to, we all do. I've put my foot so far down my throat, it's amazing. You're going to make a cultural mistake at some point. You're going to hurt someone's feelings or say something you shouldn't. And you need to have a way to deal with that. First, you need to apologize, and then you need to find out why what you did was insulting so that you won't do it again. And sometimes that means getting what I called a culture broker or someone from that culture that you're comfortable with who can kind of walk you through, well, when you said this, that, or did this, that's what caused the problem. So learning from your errors is very important. But the biggest thing I teach is don't assume what, by the way people look, by the way they speak English, by the way they dress, by the jobs they have. People will see someone working as a janitor and assume they're not educated. Not true. A lot of degrees are not recognized in this country. So you'll find people from other countries with menial jobs who were doctors and dentists and university professors in their own country. I really want to get people to just pause before you open your mouth and think about what's going to come out.
I had that experience with employees when I had a cleaning company here in Austin. I had a cleaning company that employed at one point over 200 people, and during the Vietnamese War, mm-hmm. we had boat people settled here in Central Texas, usually sponsored by churches. And I had over 30 highly educated people, men and women, working cleaning houses, cleaning new construction sites, while they were doing whatever they needed to do to get their licensing.
Mm-hmm.
It was an amazing experience for me as a human being just to be in the presence of these people. I was at times just so embarrassed to give them instructions on, and they were such fabulous workers.
Yes.
Just incredible. Often they weren't with me more than 6 months, some a year. It took one gentleman a little over a year to get his to get back in the medical field
mm-hmm.
here. But you're right. It was an amazing experience for me. I would not trade that for the world.
Right. And the other big thing I teach, too, is about the use of humor. We are people all over, but we're very careless about ethnic humor. And, you know, we're pretty... This freedom of speech is a double-edged sword. Something might be really funny when Jeff Foxworthy says it or Chris Rock says it, but it's not real funny when you say it. So to really watch the use of humor of any that has any kind of ethnic or cultural edge to it, accents and that kind of thing, when you're not really sure who you're talking to and who's in the group. Because I've seen many people hurt by what somebody thinks is funny, and it comes across as being insulting.
Which do you enjoy most, the teaching or counseling? What do you enjoy doing most?
I enjoy teaching most, standing up and speaking before a group, because it's always a challenge to me to present whatever I'm presenting in such a way that I look out and people are leaning forward in their seats. And if I can manage to do that and they're leaning forward expectantly, there's such a rush of, like, gotcha for me. I really do enjoy that. I also enjoy writing, though, finding new and different ways to put words together that have an impact on people when they read them. But my biggest high, if you will, comes from the training and the teaching.
And I'm sure you stay busy.
I do. I do stay busy. The economy has impacted me some, but I do stay busy, and I do a lot of teaching for schools and churches and anywhere that I can.
You can, folks out there, you can watch the video about the Shattered Pearl, which I've seen, www.sarmstrong, ARMSTRONG.biz, www.sarmstrong.biz. There's a wonderful video, so go watch that. Also, I'm wanting some phone calls from Ms. Armstrong. So worldwide, 877-489-6350, Canada and the United States, 1-888-228-4494. Tell me about After Me, You Come First.
This really came about over a period of time. As I had mentioned before, my first husband died in a car accident only 18 months after we'd gotten to the United States. And so for the next 15 or 20 years, I was really the meat part of the sandwich generation. I had young children, two children, and my parents were a little older. My parents did not have me until they were in their 40s. So my parents were in their 70s and 80s when my children weren't even teenagers yet. And that really was a time when I was running and ripping and going and doing for everybody but myself. And that went on for many years. When my daughter got out into the world, she found herself suddenly a single parent, having survived an abusive relationship. And she found herself doing the same thing, sacrificing everything for her son. And we were talking one day and saying, we really have to learn how to take care of ourselves, and that I had basically taught her how to behave. By watching me, she had thought that her primary responsibility was to take care of her child and do nothing else.
And what a compliment for you, though.
I guess so. So we sat down and talked about, well, why don't we try and put down on paper some things, ideas, particularly for women, but kind of for everyone, that if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be any good to anyone else. Because I did that. I drained myself to the point that I really couldn't be of much help to my family.
Sarah, I think we may have a caller. Do we have a caller? No, I thought I got a beep. I'm sorry. But
hello?
You're right. If you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of those around you.
I think someone said hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Who is this?
I'm Dominic.
Hi, Dominic. Welcome. Do you have some question or comment, or what would you like to say?
Well, I have some questions. I'm going through a little rough economic period, and I'm at the end of about a year of restoration on a property, and it's a mixed-use property, residential, commercial. And I'm kind of running out of funds, and I wanted to find out if you had something that you could say about that, as far as should I go on and try to rent out part of this property or use it for my own business or sell it.
Oh, so you're asking a psychic question of me. Okay. Just a second, Sarah. We'll be back to what we're doing. I only see you renting out a small portion of it, maybe one third or less of the property, and I don't see that happening before August. But that will be your mainstay. Whoever takes the property is going to want a 2 or 3 year lease, and they'll do very well and do what you ask for. You haven't run out of funds. You haven't looked in all the corners yet. Get past the next 18 days, and you'll get all of your answers. You've got 3 phone calls to make, 2 to get back, and out of those 2 phone calls, you'll get excellent advice and direction as far as funds are concerned. One coming from a man, one coming from a woman who sounds like a man on the phone. Does that help, Dominic?
That does. Thank you very much.
If that gives you a direction on who you need to call, that's important. I think that's probably the most important information you got there. But, yes, you need to rent some of it out. You're not under any threat of losing that property, not in any stretch of the imagination. You just need to think outside the box.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay. Call in and let me know how you're doing.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you, Dominic.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Sarah, where were we?
We were talking about after me, you come first.
after me, you come first.
So we just put this together, and we're looking on revising it and reissuing it again, of just saying stop for a minute. Just stop and understand you can't keep pouring water out of a pitcher and never putting anything back. I guess it could be summed up in saying, I want people to treat themselves as well as they treat their cell phone. When you look at your cell phone or your BlackBerry and you see the battery getting low, you will find somewhere to plug it in. You'll turn it off and plug it in, and you won't use it till the light stops blinking. Well, you have to do that to yourself.
What a wonderful analogy.
You have to turn yourself off and plug yourself in and not unplug it until the light stops blinking. And that means learning to say no. Saying no to your children, they do not have to be in 15 different activities. They really don't. And people go, well, if he doesn't do T-ball, he won't get into Harvard. Yes, yeah, you know. Come on, that's not true.
Well, maybe like
you are an important part of your world, and you have to do things that are self-preserving. We talk about being selfish, but in a new way, selfish in the sense of self-preserving, taking care of yourself. That's equally as important as whatever you do for anybody else. And if you don't do it, you are going to be miserable and irritable and tired and unable to maintain your relationships, and you're going to make yourself and everybody else miserable.
That's something that caretakers need to hear.
Oh, yes.
Big time. Big time. Caretakers are, parents are caretakers, but in a totally different way. Caretakers, unfortunately, are usually adults. Not
right.
Always.
Right, and you're having to take care of, as our America is getting older and we're living longer, and I don't know that the quality of life is necessarily any better, but there are situations where you have elderly relatives or parents mm-hmm. that you have to take care of, and there are some very difficult decisions to be made, and it's very hard sometimes to, there's a lot of guilt associated with, well, I didn't go over there every day this week. Well, you know, that's you've got to learn that might be okay. as long as you're doing the very best you can. But if you run yourself in the ground, who will take care of them then?
And this book is on the market at this point?
Well, actually, you can get it either at through my website is the easiest way.
Okay, so we're not going to find it in Borders yet?
No, not yet. That's a whole other show.
How about Amazon.com?
It might be out there. If not, it's at lulu.com, which is the publisher, lulu.com.
I've heard of that.
Yes, it's a great self-publishing site. In fact, both The Shattered Pearl and After Me, You Come First are available at lulu.com.
Okay. What next for you? What is the next book?
Well, I have a couple of them that I'm working on. One, I want to finish my life story of what happened when I came back from Uganda and all the things that have happened since then. And as you know, in The Shattered Pearl, I talk about my childhood and the fact that I had this nickname in my family and still do, which is Sweetie Pie. And I really want to title my next book, How Sweetie Pie Became a Real Person, and talk about some of the things that happened after I came home of my husband dying and me being in the sandwich generation and of getting involved in some politics in Alabama and ending up being the mayor of a town.
I was fascinated by that.
Yes, that was very bizarre.
The first mayor of the town of Shorter, Alabama.
Shorter, Alabama. It is the home of Victory Land, which is a dog racing track, which is the reason I got involved in politics. We were trying to oppose the building of that dog track and failed, and once it was built, our community was thrown into high commerce very quickly. So we incorporated to protect ourselves, and I discovered that I'm really not very good as a politician.
How long were you in office?
I stayed for 2 years. I was elected for four, but after two, I had had enough, and the city was kind of up on its feet and running a little bit. And it's still there and doing extremely well, so I'm kind of proud of what I started. And then going to California eventually remarrying and going to seminary and thinking about being ordained but deciding not to. And there's just a lot of stuff that went on, but it taught me a lot about dealing with adversity, of getting knocked down and getting up again, and, you know, all the kind of cute things that they have of, it's not how many times you get knocked down, it's how many times you get up. And you make every setback an opportunity for a comeback. And those are nice words, but it's hard to do. And I've managed to kind of do it and we're still relatively sane. And I wanted to, in this next book, share that.
I know that you have set an excellent example for your daughter and your other child. But if your daughter, keeping in mind that she has a different history than you do, she grew up in a different generation, if your daughter was going through the same thing at this point in her life, do you think she would make some of the same decisions that you made? And I don't mean that to sound as personal as it probably does. I'm not questioning her strength or her integrity. I'm curious about the generational thing.
I don't know that my daughter, if she were in a country where there was revolution, would have stayed as long as I did. I think she would have gotten out much sooner than I did. It is a generational thing. There's a whole different outlook on things. No, she wouldn't have done things exactly the same way that I did them at all. What I've tried to do is make my relationship with her different than my mother's relationship with me. My mother was very controlling. She was a wonderful person, but she was extremely controlling. She didn't want to give up any of her independence. She didn't want me to know anything about her personal affairs. I was supposed to ask how high when she said jump. And what I've tried to do with my daughter is to make it more of an exchange of information, you know, of a sharing, of saying to her, I'm not senile yet, but I know it's probably coming. So here are some of the things that I would like to happen to me should I become incapacitated or that kind of stuff.
I think we have a guest. Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the show. Who is this?
This is Stephen, calling from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Well, welcome, Scottsdale, Arizona.
At 113 degrees.
Oh, this is in Central Texas. We're pushing it. I don't think we'll get there yet. What can we do for you this evening?
Well, I'm involved in a partnership that I've been doing with another gentleman for close to a year now, and we are at another phase of our venture. And it appears that we have some potential to move forward, but I don't know if that's really a reality. And I wanted to kind of get an insight of maybe your vision of what you might be hearing or feeling from a business opportunity that I have going on right now.
You're not going to be real stable until October with anything new that you start. Now, by that I mean, not all the information is out there that you need to make that decision, to make decisions about business. The people that you're dealing with are good people with good intentions. It's a matter of timing. If you will be patient and not make any grandiose moves or assume anything, of course, in business you can never assume anything, you can hope, but October is going to open a lot of doors for you. So if you can wait and just kind of keep rocking along, October will give you everything you need, absolutely everything you need. You actually have three business opportunities. I don't know if you are aware of the third one or not, but you have three things that are going to bust loose for you between now and March of next year. And amazingly enough, one of them is because the economy is so wacky right now. One of them is because the economy is bad, or going to be bad. Heaven forbid that I said that. You know what I mean.
I do. But I think for what our venture is, what we're doing is we have one of the only products on the market that's going to has the potential of saving the real estate industry.
Go for it. I'm a licensed real estate agent. Let me know what you're doing.
Well, it's called the Down Payment Guy, and we provide funding for anybody that needs to buy a house that doesn't have the money, because what ends up happening is the sellers, because they're trying to get rid of the properties, they're basically giving the money to the buyers in a legal mechanism.
In the legal mechanism, okay.
That's correct, using Nehemiah, Meridream, Grant America, a lot of different nonprofit organizations to be able to help buyers buy. That's the only way they're able to sell their properties right now, is because they need to be able to, just because they discount the property or drop the price doesn't mean they're going to be able to sell the property. They've got to help the buyer. And this is the business venture that we're facing right now of some big banks coming in looking at our project and seeing what we're doing and trying to help, and they have very strong interest, and I just wanted to get another opinion.
It is a strong interest, but they're being very cautious because of the feds. Very, very, very cautious. And you want to protect yourself anyway. So it's good that this is happening, and it's going to take some time to get everything off the ground. Now, I don't know whether the three that I saw was three different ideas or three levels of what you're already doing. But October is going to give you the golden key.
Well, October is not that far along.
No, it isn't. And there's a lot to be done between now and then to really make this stable.
So tell me about my love life then. You know. All right, so you're making me wait till October for business, you know, but... All right, so what are you hearing as far as the romantic venue?
August. August, and lots of interest in August. Lots of interest towards you in August. You'll have a choice. It's always nice to have choices. Always nice to have choices. I don't see anybody new that you will want to put a ring on anybody's finger, anything that serious, but you've got some really nice friends to make, and you have some fun to have. I don't see you doing anything serious with anybody until probably spring of next year, and that's going to be somebody from your past.
See that last part again? I didn't hear the last part.
Somebody from the past showing up in the spring of next year, and that will be just a breath of fresh air. You'll really enjoy getting to know her again. I don't think you were ever romantically involved with her. Just knew her. she was probably the ex-wife or the widow of somebody that you knew, that sort of thing. Okay?
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you for calling.
You're
Take
welcome.
Care. Bye-bye. Right.
Bye-bye.
Sarah, I want to go back to another thing on your list. It's called Life in Developing Countries.
Yes.
Do you travel to other countries and do counseling work?
No, that I don't really do that. What I really try and do is get people here that I talk to try and understand that the world is, if we're not careful, is going to turn into islands of opulence in seas of poverty.
Ooh.
That we cannot continue to consume at the rate we do, using the rest of the world as a source of natural resources and ignore the humanity is there that's there and how they're being affected by what we do.
I think we have another beep in.
Sure.
Hello? Hello. Hello, I can barely hear you.
Hello.
That's better. What is your first name?
Jay.
Jay, do you have something to share with us or ask Ms. Armstrong?
I did have a question.
Okay.
Shall I ask you now?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought I didn't want to interrupt what was happening on the radio. Maybe I'm just delayed. I'm sorry. Yeah, I had the same question about my love life. Is there any hope?
Is there any hope? There's always hope, honey.
Yeah, I'm just
trying
not to be.
You're not going to have a lot of movement until probably midsummer of next year.
See?
But the universe is giving you a lot of opportunity to take care of issues that you need to take care of in your life right now and some things that you've been putting off, so that you can go into a relationship that, with a little bit better peace of mind and peace of heart and with a better focus.
The things I'm taking care of are like getting a business going, is that kind of thing? Or
whatever you're doing
work?
Right now, bringing it to a completion, getting it.
I'm starting a business. Yeah,
getting it ingrained in your life and getting a schedule around it and an attitude around it, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh. And then I will have cleared what I went through for the last few years. Is that part of the long period on my own?
Yes, you're bringing to fruition things that have been on your mind. You're bringing completion into your life, and you're moving forward. And having a relationship right now would kind of get in the way of all of that, and might even damage the relationship. So really knowing who you are by the middle of next summer will be a real gift to yourself and to that person. Nobody will be rescuing you, and you won't be rescuing anybody else.
Exactly. Yeah. To be autonomous, kind of whole people.
Yes, as whole as you can be on any given day, but at least you'll have taken care of some of your focus projects.
Okay,
Sarah can relate to that because she's had to do so much focusing over the last, 10 or 12 years?
Yes, definitely.
Or longer, that she can relate to that, I'm sure, and she could probably give you some wonderful insight about the focusing and being the best person you can be at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I'm really enjoying your show.
While you're doing it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Taking care of yourself. You need to watch for her book, After Me, You Come First. See?
That's right. That's a good title.
Isn't that wonderful? She's putting that together with her daughter. You can find it on her website, www.sarmstrong.biz. Go look at it.
Very good. I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling in.
Left to be.
Good night. Sarah, we have a few minutes left. What would you like to leave with our public?
I just want to leave with the public that be aware that we are part of a bigger thing than just us. America is not the center of the universe, and we have to be very much aware of what we do and how we impact the world. I want everyone to get involved in this next election. I don't care who you vote for, but vote for somebody. Study the issues, make a choice of the person you truly believe would be the best leader, because the times are crucial now. And know that we cannot continue to go on and consume the way we're doing without it having harm. And also, just take care of yourself. Stop. Actually, the world will continue to turn if you take a nap. It really will.
I love that. Thank you. Yes, it will.
And I guess I would like to ask you a question, if you have any feelings about what's coming up for me.
You need to watch your feet. You need to watch the bottoms of your feet.
Okay.
They're feeling, is the bottom, are the bottoms of your feet becoming a little calloused?
Not that I know of, but I'll look at it.
Well, watch it, because sometimes it's our bodies, and sometimes we're real sensitive to them, and sometimes we're not, and our feet are often the things that we don't pay that much attention to. So if your heels, if the ball of your feet, if the skin is changing, that's a signal for you, for your body, that something hormonally is going on, and you need to take care of it.
Okay.
It's going to reflect in that way rather than your mood swings or anything like that. It's having to do with your feet. And
okay.
I think part of that is symbolically for you. I think that's the way the universe looks at you, is your legs, your feet, your hips,
mm-hmm.
because you're not afraid to put your feet on different ground.
All right.
So now, your heart, health-wise, I think you're going to be fine over the next 3 years. After the end of the next 3 years, whatever your birth date is within the third year, is when you really need to start watching and paying attention to your family's history, particularly on your mother's side,
mm-hmm.
and be, in fact, you could start that now, but if you don't, that's when it's going to start reflecting in your own physical being. You have 4 major European trips to make in the next 19 to 24 months.
Good Lord.
You haven't even gotten the invitations yet. 2 of them are going to be very quick. You may be a stand-in for someone who can't show up at the last minute. You also are going to be back in politics, whether you like it or not.
Okay.
You are, and it's on American soil, and it will not be California politics.
Okay.
So you have a very busy 3 years ahead of you, so I have to give you a little bit of reminder to take care of yourself.
Yes, I will. One of the things I'm going to do is do something about exercising.
There you go. See, that'll help take care of your heart, too. Always checking with your doctor first.
Okay.
And if you have any other more private or more personal questions you would like to ask me, you're always welcome to call me on my 512-922-4723 number. Sarah, that's on my website, too, if you didn't get a chance to write that down.
Okay.
They're going to chase me off the air in a few minutes, so I have to say thank you to Sarah Armstrong, the authoress of The Shattered Pearl, Sarah L. Armstrong, and also, after me, you come first with her daughter. Thank you so much for having been with me this evening. It always goes too quickly.
Well, I enjoyed it, and thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Take care, and don't forget, world, share a smile with someone. Good night. Have
Good
a great
night.
Week. Be safe this July the 4th. Take care.
All right. Good night.